I always seem to start by saying, oh, this is my favourite story. But when I was little, it was one of my favourites. Because it seemed that it crossed the boundaries between what was magic and what was possible if you were just determined enough and honest enough and open enough and steadfast enough. Which I think is a lot of what Hanukkah is about. Standing up for what you believe to be right, even when you might be the only person doing it. Johannes was an orphan. He lived in the forest and he had made a home for himself there that, well, he loved. He got on well with all the animals. He lived off the land. He didn't take more than he needed. And when he heard the king's huntsman coming past, he would hide with the deer and the stag and the hares and the birds of the air. Sometimes they would even cover him over with loose leaves and branches because he was as much one of them as anyone else. And so it was that one day, at dusk, Johannes was walking through the forest that he called home, and as he went from place to place, gathering a few herbs, leaves, fruit, and, you know, the odd animal that would serve to grace his humble table, he heard a strange noise. It was the sobbing of a human child. And he made his way to the source of the sound, and there was a boy, much like himself, but so different as well. He was dressed in rich royal robes, colours that no huntsman or woodsman would wear, and when Johannes saw him, he knew that he must come from a very wealthy family. And the boy's face was tear-stained, and his cheeks were red from crying, and his eyes were puffy, And when Johannes asked him what the problem was, well, he shouted at Johannes that he was lost and he was alone and it was everybody else's fault. But although the boys were about the same age, Johannes was wiser. And he asked the boy where he lived. And it wasn't a surprise to him when the young lad said that he lived at the palace, for he was the king's son, the young prince. And in a moment of tantrum, he had left the hunting party, gone off on his own, and got hopelessly lost in the forest. So Johannes said that he would bring him home. And this he did. He navigated that way through the forest, for it was his home. He could have done it blindfold most days. Eventually, he took Johannes home, and the king said, "What reward would you like? I will give you gold or silver. What would your family like?" And Johannes said, I don't need anything and I have no family. Just let them return to my home. And so the king, giving him food from the kitchen, let Johannes go. Oh, but that young prince, he wanted Johannes as a playmate. He stamped and he shouted, he screamed and he raged, and he would not settle down, and he was so used to getting his own way that, well, it didn't occur to him that anyone else's feelings should be taken into account. And when his tutors and the palace staff could get no rest, eventually the king sent out a decree that Johannes was to be found. And of course he was. For among the king's retinue were stealthy hunters, as good at hiding as Johannes could ever be. And eventually the poor boy was taken out of the forest, protesting that this was the only home he ever had. And they thought they were doing him a favour. They washed him in a tub. They put him in fine clothes that felt so wrong. And he was put in front of the young prince as his playmate, as a toy. And Johannes, he didn't take well into the palace. It wasn't his natural environment. But they would go out riding. And they would go out hunting. And they would go into the forest. And Johannes would always come home, but he felt such a prisoner in those walls. And one day the young prince decided to leave the path. And Johannes begged him not to, because they were in a part of the forest that even he didn't know. "Please," And the prince looked and said, I should listen to you when you are nothing but a commoner. And any pretense at friendship was gone. And Johannes realised that he could live in the palace for the rest of his life, but he would still be nothing more than a servant. And so they went deeper and deeper into the forest. They left the path and they were completely and utterly lost. The prince got off his horse, took Johannes's and said he would tether them while Johannes looked at the stars and navigated the way home. But to navigate by the stars, well, if you live in a forest, you navigate by the trees. And Johannes couldn't read the stars that well. And the young prince, well, he couldn't be bothered to tether the horses properly. He usually had people that did that sort of thing for him. And with the first coming on of the evening light, the first crack of a twig, those horses, well bred in the palace, they started and they ran for home. And the two boys, well, they couldn't keep up and they were even more lost. And now without horses. And Johannes said, well, we'll light a fire. We'll wait till morning and we'll find our way home then. But the young prince was having none of it. I will starve. I haven't had my evening meal. We will freeze to death in the forest. And it didn't matter what Johannes said. All that prince would do is scream and rage and shout. Until in the end, Johannes put his head in his hands and he thought, if only the creatures of the forest were here to help me. And the words were not out of his mouth long when the air was full of light, a twinkling light, the most magical light. It was full of fireflies. And the young prince looked up and he tried to grasp these creatures, but Johannes said, no, they'll lead us home. And so they did. They followed the fireflies that led a shining golden light through the forest, and the two boys walked and their path was lit and they did not stumble once. And as Johannes turned to thank the fireflies, what did the young prince do? But he took off his riding hat and he scooped some of those fireflies and he held the hat shut. They were so beautiful. He wanted them as well. And it didn't matter how much Johannes begged and pleaded that the fireflies should be freed. The prince was having none of it. And when they got back to the palace, a jar was brought up from the kitchen and the fireflies were put in it and the lid put on. All night, those creatures buzzed and glowed and enchanted the prince. But in the morning, when there was no light and it was just a jar of insects, the prince was disgusted. He shook and rattled the poor creatures, but it didn't matter how much Johannes tried to explain. The prince would not listen. And Johannes, fearing for their safety, when the prince's back was turned, grabbed the jar, ran out of the palace into the forest and set them free. And now he was free too. But his freedom didn't last long. He was dragged back to the palace, dragged in front of the king. And the king said, why did you do that? Why did you disobey my son? Because what he was doing was wrong. And it didn't matter whether the king agreed or not. He could not lose face in front of a commoner. And he said, so you wish the freedom of all things? And Johannes just looked at the king, that small boy, the same age as his son, but wiser. He said, for stealing from the prince, I should have you sentenced to death, or at least put into the deepest, darkest dungeon. But I won't. You have been a good friend to him, and he can be difficult. So what I will give you is a small piece of land on the outskirts of the city with which to make your home, to plough and plant trees, and that will be your land and no one will be able to take you from it. And Johannes was banished from the palace, and for some that would have been such a terrible, terrible thing, but Johannes, with a small piece of paper in his back pocket, was shown to a piece of old scrubland, half swamp, at the edge of the kingdom. And Johannes had a piece of land. Oh, and he planted trees and he planted crops and he built himself a small house. And the years passed and the land, Johannes's land, flourished. The old king died, and the young prince, now a young man, became king. And oh, he was as obnoxious and as loud and as selfish and as given to tantrums as ever he was as a child. And soon, well, people would leave the land. They would leave the palace. They would leave the kingdom. It was only by a rule of fear that he made people stay. Until one day he noticed at dusk, even those that stayed would sneak out of the city and make their way towards the very edges of their kingdom, until they came to a piece of land that was so beautiful. There were forests and streams. There were little houses, a small hamlet, if you like. There were crops, and everyone was smiling and eating well. And even his own people that snuck out, they sat. There was a roaring fire. And there was a young man, a weather-beaten face and hands that had worked hard, blistered and calloused, but he had the sweetest voice. And he sat there of an evening and he told them stories, more stories than I could tell you this night. And the people were entranced and they laughed and they sang. And in the end of the day, when the stories were finished and the fire damped down, people would return to their houses and the people from the city would reluctantly walk back. And when the king saw this, the king that had been the selfish prince, he was furious. He didn't recognise Johannes. And so he sent soldiers to take away that land. But Johannes had a piece of paper from the king saying that it was his, it belonged to him. And even the young prince couldn't go against his father. Even though he was long in the grave, he wouldn't do that. And so he devised a plan to trick Johannes out of the land. He arrived the next evening at dusk in the wake of all of his own subjects. And as they prepared themselves for the stories, he said, "What is your name?" And when the name of Johannes was whispered across the fire, the king that had been that selfish prince began to remember. He said, you are the one that has stolen from me, and now I will take this land from you. Really, said Johannes, but I have paper saying it is mine. Then you will wager it. I'm not a gambling man, said Johannes. Nevertheless, you will do as a loyal subject a task for me. I will give you 3 tasks for 3 nights, and if you cannot accomplish them, then the land belongs to me. And with a decree ringing across the air and a silence around that fire, Johannes said, "What is your first task?" "Tomorrow night," he said, "I will come and I will ask, and you must show me a hare that my dogs can never catch." And people looked and they wrung their hands. But the following evening, the king, he rode up, no longer in disguise, and with his retinue, and he said, So Johannes, show for me a hare that my dogs can never catch. And around the legs of the horses were hunting hounds, desperate for blood. On a hill in the distance, a glow began. And there, taking shape so slowly, as if being pulled into focus by the evening light, as the sun began to set, there was a beautiful golden hare. As the hunting dogs saw it, as they were let off the leash, they chased that hare. They chased it across the tops of the hills, and people saw that golden creature running. They saw it come down into the valley, and just as it began to enter the very hamlet itself, with the great dogs running behind it as their maws opened and their slavering jaws and their howling and yowling and barking. There, the golden hare running, just as they were about to devour and catch it, seemed to disappear before everyone's eyes. And as they blinked and their eyes got accustomed to the dark again, it was as if the golden hare had never been there. A hare that your dogs could not catch. And the king looked at Johannes and said, "Oh, you think you're very clever, don't you? But tomorrow, give me a hawk that can never be tamed." And again, at dusk, they arrived. And he said, "So give me a hawk that can never be tamed." Johannes took two of the king's best hunters and he said, "Stand there and hold out your gauntlet arms." And they held out their arms. And in the dusk, as the sun began to set, people watched in wonder, wide-eyed and opened mouths, as if on the forearm of each hunter began to slowly appear two beautiful golden hawks. And they looked at them. And they took the jesses to put them round the legs of the hawks and the bonnets to put over the eyes of the hawks so they could take them back to the palace and tame them. And just as they were about to put the bonnet over the eyes and the jesses round the feet, the hawks flew into the air, and as the huntsmen went to retrieve them, they disappeared. The king was furious. "Well, Johannes, tomorrow is your final task and you will not be able to do this. Show me an apple tree full of apples that can never be eaten." Now, on the third challenge, the square of Johannes's hamlet was packed. And people stood 12 rows deep because as the king rode up, there, in the centre of the square that had not been there before, was the most beautiful golden tree, and hanging, weighing down its branches, golden apples. And the king commanded two of his courtiers to go forward and pluck those apples. And they did. But as they reached up their hands to pluck the apples disappeared. And now the people were close enough to see that as the apples disappeared and the king commanded that the tree should be cut down, as the axeman raised his axe, the tree also disappeared. And then people looked in wonder, for over their heads, like a million stars, were thousands and thousands of golden fireflies. And they made the shapes of hares and hawks, of trees and apples, and the people looked in wonder. Ah! And the king looked at Johannes and said, "What is this magic that you have?" And Johannes said, "It is no magic, Your Majesty. It is just a respect for all living things." And the king said, "Could I ever live in this place?" And Johannes said, "If you were prepared to leave your crown and your cloak behind." And the king nodded and went back to the palace, and some say he ruled a little wiser after that. And sometimes he would venture out at night, but he could never find Johannes's piece of land ever again, for he could never give up his crown and his cloak.